In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy on Salem radio show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on state government.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
It's not just a show. It's self-defense. And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And thank you for joining us today on the iSpy radio show, where every week we try to get a little more intelligence on big government. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. We have a very full show for you today, so I'm going to try to keep my intro as short as possible. Now, if you're a regular listener of the iSpy radio show, you know that we've been following the effort to remove four perfectly good hydroelectric dams down on the Klamath River. While this was characterized in the press as an open and transparent process, those close to it, who are opposed to the dam removal, say it was anything but transparent. I highly encourage you to go to our website, iSpyRadio.com, and download our past shows on the Klamath Dam removal. They're absolutely free to download, and we've got three shows up there, and they'll give you the background on all of this, especially the disputes with the science and the peer review process and this whole coming to consensus. Today we're talking with Paul Hauser, who alleges he was fired for disagreeing with the rosy picture being painted by the summary of key conclusions of the scientific and technical reports, which he feels did not accurately portray the scientific findings. Now, before you think that this is just some disgruntled low-level employee, I should add that Paul Hauser is actually Dr. Paul Hauser. He is, or I guess I should say was, the former science advisor to the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. While there, he was specifically responsible for developing the scientific integrity, peer review, and data stewardship policies. And yet, when he questioned the scientific integrity and how the science was being marketed to the public, he was told he wasn't needed anymore. With that, let's bring in Dr. Paul Hauser, who's joining us by phone. Dr. Hauser, it's an honor to speak with you today. Thanks for joining us.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Great. We wanted to bring you on today because as I looked over your allegations, what I saw was here's this guy who's just doing his job, who's really trying to do the right thing here by questioning the reporting of the science, and you know, questioning itself is a vital part of science anyway, and you get punished for it. And so my heart really goes out to you, and I admire your courage to come out and talk about all this.
Well, thank you. It took a big decision to come out and point out this scientific integrity issue and also the whistleblowing. I had to, you know, work with my family to find out if it was actually something we were going to do. And they all encouraged me to do the right thing.
Awesome. That's really great. That's so important to have your family in there with you. Let's start painting the picture a little bit. As I said in my opener, you're not exactly some low-level disgruntled employee who had a personality conflict with their boss or was let go because it turns out you didn't have the experience they thought you had. You've got a very rich and deep background. I'm very impressed by it. You worked for, among other things, NASA and the Goddard Space Flight Center, and you've been an associate professor at George Mason University for the last 7 years. And I see that you've got your degree as a hydrometeorologist. What is that, and what do you do? In other words, what are the real-world applications for that science?
Sure. Well, let me just give you a little background. So I started my career about 22 years ago working for the U.S. Geological Survey during high school doing stream gauging, collecting water samples and measuring stream flow in the Yakima River Basin in Washington State. From there, I went to school at University of Arizona and got a bachelor's and Ph.D. in hydrology and water resources, and I specialized in hydrometeorology. Hydrometeorology studies kind of the interface between water on the surface and water in the atmosphere, so precipitation, evaporation, runoff, snow, and that sort of thing. So with that background, I went to the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, and I worked there for 8 years, basically studying hydrometeorology from space using advanced spaceborne sensors that I actually ended up helping to design a few that are flying in space. So that was quite a privilege. But I'd always wondered if I should try teaching. So I got an opportunity in 2005 to go work at George Mason University. So I I've done that. I've had quite a few students graduate with advanced degrees and really have grown to enjoy teaching quite a lot.
Terrific.
But in about a year ago, I saw an opportunity to work with the Bureau of Reclamation.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my frustration of everybody has frustration in their job, but one of mine was that I felt like I was doing a lot of cool stuff, but I wasn't sure if it was really making a difference, whether it was helping people. And so with Reclamation is a group that I felt was, you know, really on the ground working with water problems all throughout the West. I'd worked with them before in a research mode. I'm like, hey, here's an opportunity for me to go and make a difference in water sciences. So I went and applied, and I was offered the job.
Awesome. And that was in April of 2011, and the job that you took is science advisor to the Bureau of Reclamation. And for those who don't know, because I didn't, the Bureau of Reclamation is an agency under the U.S. Department of the Interior and is responsible for water resource management. They're basically responsible for overseeing water storage and diversion and delivery projects that are then used for water supply, irrigation, and hydroelectric power. So what did you do there as a science advisor?
So a science advisor, I was science advisor to the commissioner, the head of the Bureau of Reclamation. I was the highest level scientist in the organization and one of the highest level scientists in the government. So, that was a good position to go in and make a difference and be involved in lots of different things. And Reclamation is an interesting mission because it has a mission to manage water resources in the western United States. But people really know them for their dams. So like Hoover Dam and Grand Coulee Dam are Reclamation dams.
Talk to us about that time on the job from when you were hired in April through September when all this started. During that time, how were you treated? What did your superiors have? Did you have a pretty good working relationship?
Yeah, I was treated well. I had a lot of trips out to the West to tour different areas. I toured the Klamath River Basin. I toured Northern California, most of California in the Central Valley. I also toured some locations in Colorado, the lower Colorado. And so I really was embraced and, gave lots of presentations. And, people really liked to have me around, and I was contributing.
Okay. So at any of your other jobs, would anyone ever call you a rabble-rouser or a troublemaker at any of those other previous positions you had?
No, I always got great reviews and got bonuses. I regularly got awards. I actually won the presidential award for young scientists in 2000. So I have a pretty distinguished career, and I really haven't had issues like this.
Okay, great. All right, good. And let's go ahead and take a little break right there. Coming up, hear what happened next when Dr. Hauser started asking some questions. And thanks for staying with us on the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking some more about the efforts to remove the Klamath Dams, and we're talking today with Dr. Paul Hauser, who's the former science advisor to the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, who was dismissed when he started asking some questions. So, Dr. Paul, in this segment, let's walk people through a kind of a timeline of events and specifically what happened to you. But just to back up first a little bit, in 2009, Secretary Salazar stated that the proposal to remove the Klamath River Dams, quote, will not fail. So it seems to me right from the beginning that this was a predetermined outcome. And then in February 2010, they announced the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, which was negotiated among state, local, tribal, and water provider leaders. And again, it just seems to me that this whole process is backwards. They come to an agreement to remove the dams and then do the study to determine if it's a good idea. And then in April of 2011, that's when you're hired as the science advisor, and things go along pretty uneventfully until 5 months later. And September 14th, the Public Affairs Office casually gives you a draft of the press release from the Department of the Interior because she had some concerns about the scientific reporting in that. So why don't you pick up the story from that point? What were her concerns, and why did she come to you? I mean, were you the go-to guy for that sort of thing?
I wasn't necessarily the go-to guy, but I was the only scientist in the D.C. office. The Reclamation has a very small footprint in D.C. They have 5,000 employees, but they only have 70 that are stationed in D.C., and I was the only scientist. So, and this particular press officer knew me. We actually had gone on one of these tours, a tour of the lower Colorado together, and so I got to know her relatively well. And so she came to me as kind of a friend and someone, she knew I knew the science. So she came to me and said, hey, what do you think?
Okay. So then the next day you actually had some concerns about that as you read it. That's correct?
Yeah, so I had some initial concerns right off the bat. It was saying how removing the dams was going to save the fish and to create a huge number of jobs. I'm not really, I can't really judge the jobs, but from what I had known from taking the tour of the Klamath dams and also talking to scientists there, reading some of the reports, it seemed to me that the science wasn't so clear that removing the dams was going to result in a huge rebound of the fish population.
Yeah, because I've read that scientific study, and that was certainly the impression that I got, is that they're painting a pretty rosy picture. So you the next day, then, you wrote out your concerns in a disclosure about the scientific integrity of that draft press release. And what exactly were you concerned about? Is it just the way that they were representing it, or was there actual elements of the science that you were concerned about?
In that case, I was just concerned about how they were representing it. So there was a summary of the draft EIS, EIR, and related science reports. And that summary was very optimistic, like you said, very rosy. And the science just wasn't that clear. There were some technical panels that met last summer that said, hey, look, there's a lot of uncertainty here, and if you take the dams out, you could actually make things worse. If you take the dams out, you want the fish to recover, then you need to do a whole bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. You have to restore the river. You have to fix water quality issues, all kinds of different things, temperature right. issues. So none of that was put into this this summary that was put forward to the public.
So after you wrote up that disclosure, what happened after you gave that back to Nell, the public affairs officer?
Yeah, so the secretary's public affairs officer, the public affairs officer for the Department of Interior, I gave it to him. He asked me to be sure that I did not email it to him. He wanted to make sure there weren't discoverable records, and that immediately sent off alarm bells to me. There's something weird going on.
Yeah,
here. And so I did give him a hard copy. I didn't email it to him. He directed me to talk to the solicitor's office, which is a group of lawyers that represent the department in various activities. They apparently had written the summary. So I went there with Nell, the press officer who had asked me to review this, and gave it to them. I also gave them a hard copy. And then my boss was out of town, so I emailed her a copy. I did that somewhat intentionally. I did want this to be a transparent process. I knew that I was in the right, and I thought that she would support me. You know, this is kind of when you're working at a place, kind of a family idea that you're looking out for each other. So I had assumed that she would be my partner in this kind of stuff.
So to be clear, I want to make sure that I heard that right. You did or did not intentionally email that to her?
I decided I should intentionally email it to her. She was out of town, I thought it should be documented.
Absolutely, it should be.
Because I didn't want to have somebody come back to me and say, hey, why didn't you point this out? That's
right.
Part of your job.
Right, exactly. And plus there's that that whole idea that, you know, transparency needs to be happening in government affairs. So
right. I mean, the public should be able to trust the government. The government shouldn't be hiding things. So even if I was wrong, there shouldn't have been a concern about, you know, hiding it.
Right. Right. Right, exactly. So who else did you talk to then at that point in order to come to your opinion? Did you talk to other experts at that point, or did you just pretty much do it on your own?
I talked to some of the people. I wanted to make sure that I was right. I wanted to, you know, get all the references down and cross all the T's and dot all the I's. So I called the press officer for reclamation in the Mid-Pacific region in Sacramento, and he said on the phone, yeah, this is definitely biased, but it's above my pay level. Mm. So there was some, he knew it was biased. I also reached out to some people in the Klamath Office of Reclamation, and they also confirmed that they thought it was a biased summary.
Mm. Okay, let's go ahead and take a little break right there. Coming up, we'll be talking about his specific allegations, but stay with us as we continue Dr. Hauser's story, who was let go when he didn't toe the company line. And thanks for staying with us as we continue talking with Dr. Paul Hauser, former science advisor to the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, who was let go when he raised concerns about over the bias in those summary reports and that the science behind the Klamath Dam removal wasn't being portrayed accurately. So, Paul, let's continue our story about what happened after you raised a red flag. And for those of us just joining us, by this time you had talked to some people who could make necessary changes, and you'd expressed some concerns about the integrity of the larger determination process, and you were concerned specifically that the department wasn't summarizing the science. I'm sorry, you were concerned that this department was summarizing the science in a biased manner, and that same bias may actually infuse the ultimate determination. Is that pretty much true?
That's right. So
okay.
I put forward some concerns about the bias in this press release. I didn't hear any feedback from the folks who wrote it, but they did change it slightly. So they changed the title, and they changed one of the paragraphs I was concerned about. But the bulk of what I was concerned about was actually in an attachment that's on the web. It was a supplementary material that summarized point by point some of the science in the Klamath dam removal issues. And that didn't change at all.
So then on September 19th, 5 days after being asked to review the press release, what happened? What kind of feedback did you get about your concerns?
Yeah, so that was the first chance I had to get to check with my boss. She was back in town. And I, stopped by her office and just said, hey, I need to let you know what's been going on with this press release. And she nodded and, she wasn't, she did not have a happy look on her face. And then she proceeded to tell me that she thought that I did the wrong thing by emailing it to her, and the way I did the disclosure she thought showed poor judgment. And then she said, the secretary really wants to remove those dams. Mm. And I got the impression that she wasn't happy that I was impeding that process through my disclosure.
Mm. I'm looking through some of your allegations here, and this is from Christine Karras, the deputy area manager, Klamath Basin area. And she specifically warned you against creating discoverable records. And that's just chilling when I hear that.
Yeah, and I got the same advice from my boss, Kira Finkler, and also from Adam Fletcher, the Department of Interior press secretary. Mm. So they all were concerned about me creating discoverable records that could be accessed by the public through FOIA, Freedom Information Act request. And that just really does concern me, that our government is, being so, what are they trying to hide? I mean,
exactly.
That doesn't seem like a transparent, healthy environment.
So then fast forward then to September 21st. Now, this is now 1 week after you've been handed that press release, the summary of the key conclusions, draft EIS, EIR, and related scientific technical reports is released to the public. What did you think about that final version?
I didn't look at the final version too closely. I was more concerned about the summary that was on top of it. Mm-hmm. That was the main thing that the public was going to look at. So at that point, I wasn't looking at the underlying documents, the EIS, EIR. I was mainly looking at how the summary document reflected documents that were produced in support of the EIS, EIR.
I see. Okay. So then talk to us about the month of October, because at this point you've rocked the boat a little bit, and I know that you heard back during October from one of your colleagues, David Gore, who has a title longer than this segment, quite frankly, who confirmed that the bias and also expressed his concerns that the attorneys were so heavily involved in writing the reports. But I also know in October then that you had your performance review. How did that go?
Yeah, so I had my performance review. I thought I had performed quite well. I'd never gotten a bad review, and I had no indication that I was going to get a bad review. So when my boss presented me that, and she actually had a witness in the room, which was a little intimidating. That
seemed
a little strange.
Yeah, that would be.
I never had a witness for a performance review before. So she handed me this performance review that's, quite frankly, the worst I've ever gotten. And the specific points were things like I wasn't a team player, or I wasn't doing supporting the department's mission and goals, mm-hmm. or that I was jumping to conclusions that people weren't listening to me because of how I handled this particular case. And we went and actually talked about this quite substantially, this disclosure. And she made it pretty clear that she thought that the final press release was unbiased. But she also had told me she didn't actually read the underlying documents. And when I expressed concern about the larger issue, about the secretarial decision to move the dams that was due in March, and how this process could taint that, she really was not happy to hear that. She presented me at that meeting with a document that changed my employment status. So I was a permanent employee, and they changed me to a probationary employee, an employee that could be fired at any time.
Mm, mm.
So, and just to be clear, is there anything else that had happened from April until September that, that she could point to that, that where you were not being a team player?
No, not that I know of.
Okay. So then, in, how'd that change the mood in the office then at that point? I mean, when you're placed on probation, do your colleagues treat you any differently? And especially to the other scientists, is your work now suddenly suspect?
My support from the ranks and file was still quite high. They didn't know about the performance review. But, of course, my boss and other leaders in the office were aware of the issue, and their attitude towards me changed dramatically at that point. And it actually changed before that. Right after I made the disclosure, things changed dramatically.
And then in November, you saw your travel request start being denied. Why is that important?
Well, reclamation being mostly in the Western United States, I have to travel to go and meet with scientists and see real issues, participate in meetings. So before September 15th, I traveled 26% of the time. Afterwards, only 4%. So only for the most critical things, a leadership team meeting, an interagency meeting with the Corps of Engineers. That really hampered my ability to do my job.
So basically, she's asking you to do your job better, but then removing your ability to do it.
Right, and she removed a few other things. She denied training, so there's a mandatory executive training from the position I was in. I worked with some of the training folks and came up with a wonderful plan for training, and she denied any opportunity for training. And then also she had offered some mentoring. She offered the, I'll help you make sure you're successful. And every time I had a meeting with her, I asked her, how am I doing? And every time she said, okay. Mm. And then every time I asked her, how can I improve? And she said, I can't think of anything.
Wow. Okay, so, everyone, we need to take a little break right here. Coming up, we'll be getting into the heart of Dr. Hauser's allegations. Everyone stay with us. And thanks for staying with us on the iSpy Radio Show. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Paul Hauser. He's the former science advisor to the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, who, among other things, was responsible for developing the scientific integrity, peer review, and data stewardship policies. And he was fired when he raised concerns over the bias in the summary science reports behind the Klamath Dam removal. And the one thing we've left out of the timeline is that on February 8th, your supervisor then came after this, after she'd come up with this professional review process for you to go through. On February 8th, she came to you and said, your expertise and skills are not a good match for the science advisor position. And she gave you until the 10th to resign or be terminated. And so what did you do at that point?
So I had training on whistleblower protection, and I was also the scientific integrity officer for Bureau of Reclamation. So I knew what was going on, violated both of those policies, the whistleblower protection and the scientific integrity policy. So I went to the Inspector General's office and filed a complaint with them. They did some extensive interviews and encouraged me in the end to try and resolve the issue internally with Reclamation to see if we could find a way to solve it without blowing it out of, blowing it out into the public. So I tried over the course of the next couple of weeks. I tried to work with my boss, and I got very little traction with that. And so on the 24th, I went ahead and filed both a whistleblower complaint with the Office of Special Counsel, but also a scientific integrity allegation with Department of Interior, according to their policy on scientific integrity.
Yep. And then on the 24th, you were officially terminated. So I'm curious, though, you are the expert on scientific integrity. Why are they not listening to you?
It's a good question, and I think it just has to do with the way politics are played in some of these big agencies. So the agency has conflicting policies. They have a policy, in the case of the Klamath, they want to remove the dams. That's part of the Secretary's legacy that he wants to have. He wants to restore fisheries and streams, and that's a noble thing to do, of course. But if the science doesn't support that, then they are they're in conflict because they need to try and essentially spin the science to support their mission.
Yep.
Otherwise, they can't achieve their mission, but they can have scientific integrity. And so for them, the secretary's mission comes before everything.
Yep. So talk to us about the importance of this summary that you had issue with. Why is it so important to be accurate in this summary portion?
Because the summary is, the EIS and EIR are key documents that the secretary should use to make his decision. And the summary of those documents is, you know, what most people will read. It's like the executive summary. It's
right.
the most public part. It needs to give a concise but clear picture of what the underlying reports say.
All right. And you have two specific allegations that are available online. In fact, we're going to make sure that we put that on our site, iSpyRadio.com. And then we'll also make sure that we put on our site links to your site as well, so people can actually go look at your CV and also be able to download some of those allegations. And specifically, you say the first allegation is intentional falsification, and you specifically accuse the unreported authors of the report and Department of Interior officials. So what do you mean by that, intentional falsification, and give us an example?
Okay, so intentional falsification is when you intentionally report the science in a wrong way. So it's not changing the science, but it is re-reporting that science, summarizing the science, in a presentation or however you want to communicate it. It's communicating the science incorrectly or not true to the underlying conclusions that were drawn.
Okay.
So intentionally doing that is doing that on purpose.
Okay. And then you went to people that could have taken action to correct those mistakes, but when they took no action, you're now accusing them of intentionally circumventing policy that ensures the integrity of science and scholarship. And within that, you specifically accuse Mr. Adam Fletcher, who's the Department of Interior Press Secretary, and Kira Finkler, the Department, the Deputy Commissioner for External and Intergovernmental Affairs Bureau of Reclamation. So talk to us about that accusation.
Okay, so the scientific integrity policy for the Department of Interior has a number of different things that need to be upheld to or could be broken to break scientific integrity. And those are falsification, fabrication, plagiarism, and circumventing the policy itself. So getting in the way of scientific integrity or checking, the scientists that are involved in scientific integrity, getting in their way and preventing them from doing that. So some of the things that they did we've already talked about. For example, telling me not to make this disclosurable documents or discoverable documents on these cases, but then also actually firing me. So going through the process of reprisal for my action of disclosing my concerns on the scientific integrity is really not in the spirit of ensuring scientific integrity and is in fact impeding that process. So
okay.
That's really what that second allegation is about.
Okay. And then did you ever hear of others within the office having similar doubts regarding your allegations specifically about the bias there, or were you really the one and only lone voice there?
I was the only one who really spoke out. But obviously, from the very beginning, the press officer who handed me the report had concerns. She didn't regularly send me or give me this kind of information. So that was obviously someone who was concerned. There was the Mid-Pacific press secretary. There was the scientist in the Klamath Basin office. And it was also Mr. Gore who expressed concerns to me about the whole process, and especially the involvement of the solicitor's office in writing the EIS and EIR that really should be written by scientists and not necessarily by people who are trying to get a certain outcome.
So clearly you're not alone in your concerns. There's a lot of people in the Klamath Falls area that are concerned about this. I know in North California they're very concerned about it. And I have here a letter from the County of Siskiyou Board of Supervisors, and it's notifying them their intent to file suit regarding the determination on the future of the Klamath Project. And I'd just like to read this first paragraph. Dear Secretary Salazar, based on your 2009 statement that the proposal to remove the Klamath Dams, quote, will not fail, and the subsequent course of action that has been followed by the Department of the Interior to construct such an outcome, the County of Siskiyou is convinced legal action is necessary to challenge a decision that is contrary to science and the stated goals for Klamath River and which will be inimical to the interests of the people of Siskiyou County. If you do indeed press forward at this time and issue the secretarial determination, Siskiyou County intends to challenge the decision in federal court. So obviously you're not alone. There's got to be other people out there. But here's my concern. You've been made an example of. What message does this send to the other people that are left behind, and how will that impact future scientific integrity?
That's a very good question, and I hope that that gets addressed through this process. That's why I've brought forward these allegations, is I want to be, you know, an honest broker in this process. I don't have anything to gain or lose in this process. I've already lost my job. Don't know if I really want it back. So in this situation, I really do hope that the culture can change. I think we have a ways to go to see if that actually can happen.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, what should the reports be saying? And thanks for staying with us as we continue to talk with Dr. Paul Hauser. He's the former science advisor to the Bureau of Reclamation, and he was let go when he started raising some concerns over the bias in the summary reports that are behind the science to remove the Klamath Dams. And so, Paul, why don't we talk a little bit about some of those concerns of yours? You outlined them really well on your allegations, and again, we'll make that available on iSpyRadio.com. And so what are, just real briefly, some of your overall concerns that those reports should have been saying?
So, for example, the summary says that coho salmon will reclaim 68 miles of habitat. And that sounds pretty good, but the actual underlying Klamath River Expert Panel final reports that were done last summer said that they really expected that the habitat reclamation would be expected to be have a small impact on coho salmon, especially in the short term. So by admitting that additional information, they're only reporting the positive side and distorting and falsifying the science. So, you know, they're intentionally trying to make it look better than it looks. There's a number of other points that I make. For example, to do with salmon disease, they say that the removal of the dams is likely to reduce salmon disease, but doesn't properly state the uncertainty. So they said that the uncertainty in those aspects is very high, for example. So uncertainty is an important part of reporting science, and also an important part that decision makers need to hear. And it's not just about length. That's just a very, you know, simple thing to add, and it gives the science more. It makes the science accurate.
So, in your estimation, then, as you're picturing the secretary getting this report, are you thinking that it's a foregone conclusion, and he's already made that decision anyway? I mean, are you really expecting that this is going to change his mind if it was more, if it wasn't biased?
I didn't realize that he probably already had his mind made up when I put this disclosure in. Mm. I really wanted to make sure he was getting the right information to make his decision. But in looking at the situation later, after I was terminated, I realized that he had already made up his mind. Actually, I got that information from my boss a few days after I put the.
Oh, very interesting. That's an interesting point, because as I'm going through the timeline and stuff that we'd constructed, and I just kind of assumed that you had heard in 2009 that he had already made that determination he was going to pull him.
Yeah, I didn't hear him say that. I had read about that after the fact, and then my boss told me that that was the case. So. I was in good faith, you know, really hoping that the department would fix this issue and just report the science accurately.
Mm. Well, have you ever seen a science question like this on any other jobs? And if so, what's been the result of that?
I've seen similar types of things, but not ever quite so political. I've never been in such a position. I've seen and had to deal with employees that plagiarized things. I've had to deal with incomplete science or decision-making that wasn't fully informed, but the politics in this one are particularly acute. And then there's also conflicts of interest and money and all kinds of other things that play into the decision-making here that really put the science in the backseat.
Well, what aspects, especially the money, are you thinking that plays a role in this?
It's come to light that my boss actually was a, before she joined Reclamation, was a lobbyist for Trout Unlimited. Mm. And Trout Unlimited has signed on to the agreement to take the dams out. There's also some relationship reported with Trout Unlimited and Pacific Core that owns the dams. So, there's a lot of money involved. There's probably over $1 billion in funding that would go to this dam removal project. And it's not clear who exactly is benefiting. So some of the decision makers involved may be conflicted, and that's concerning.
Wow, absolutely. And just to be clear, you're saying Trout Unlimited, correct? The trout like the fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Trout Limited, not Trout Unlimited. And some of the papers that we've seen, I mean, they're huge. They're very involved in this.
Right, and I didn't realize that they were. I didn't realize the connection with my former supervisor until actually some of these press releases came out in the last few weeks.
Wow, amazing. So have you ever known anyone in a similar position to yours in government who's faced similar charges or problems in this? I mean, are we seeing basically a typical problem here in science reporting in when it comes to government?
I think this is an issue in general. I've only, in my position, I had one other case where I had to actually make a decision on whether it was a scientific integrity issue, and that had to do with a couple of scientists who testified in front of a judge last summer about the Bay Delta Schmelt and how the science was done to figure out how to restore that fishery. And the judge accused the scientists of being zealots or misrepresenting the science for a political purpose. Hmm. And we looked at what they said, and they really did not directly lie or violate the scientific integrity policy, but they surely did not uphold the public trust. They didn't fully explain themselves. And so that's an issue. So when you don't fully explain the science or fully disclose the science to a decision maker, like in this case a judge, the judge can't make a decision. They get frustrated because they don't have all the information they need.
So
in this case, the scientists, didn't actually falsify the science. They just didn't fully explain it.
Okay. I got to tell you, listening to this process, my trust in the whole public system has certainly been shaken. Paul, let's go ahead and take a little break right here. When we come back, where does he go from here? And thanks for staying with us. We're now into our final segment with Dr. Paul Hauser, former science advisor to the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, who was let go when he raised concerns over the bias in the summer reports that were being marketed to the public. And so, Paul, what's been the reaction of some of your coworkers to this? I mean, because that's really kind of a family environment, most workplaces. Did any of them come out in support of you or also raise issues with the summary?
The coworkers at Reclamation?
Yeah.
No. They were surprised when I told them that I was being terminated. They were amazed, but none of them came out in support of this. So it's a very challenging environment, and it takes a lot of bravery to come out and actually go public with these things. So, they probably want to keep their jobs too.
Well, and that's that intimidation factor that we talked about a little bit earlier, is that, this is going to start really impeding some of that scientific integrity. Has there been, I'm curious though, because you also have that teaching position, has there been a negative reaction at all with that teaching position and the relationship you have with your, with George Mason?
Let me tell you, that's been absolutely incredible. So
good.
I took a leave of absence, kind of indefinite leave of absence from George Mason when I took the job at Reclamation. And I went back, after I got terminated, I went back to George Mason and said, hey, can I come back? And they had me back on the payroll the next day. So it was just a wonderful welcoming experience. They continuously say how they value my input in the university and my expertise there. And then my boss at George Mason, I told her about this issue, and she encouraged me more than anybody else to make sure I got the truth out there, to make sure that I did the right thing with respect to scientific integrity.
That's terrific.
So that's just very, very enlightening and positive environment.
Okay, and this firing has been very recent. I mean, it only happened about a month ago. What's happened to your relationship with fellow scientists in the field as a result of this firing? Are they also being supportive, or are some of them kind of distancing themselves from you?
No, I'm getting a lot of support. I have a lot of long-term colleagues, of course, at NASA and various universities, mostly on the East Coast, but a few in California. And I've just had a lot of support. I mean, you know, people know me. I've been around for over 20 years doing research in collaboration with these folks. They know that I'm an ethical, you know, good scientist, and they're not just going to dismiss that. So when I've told people about this, they said, you know, some derogatory things about reclamation, about it being a kind of a backwards agency and being, you know, they were lucky to have me, but I'm lucky to be out, that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm moving on. I'm teaching and writing some new grant proposals to see if I can get, you know, some students started with me.
Okay. And so when an allegation such as yours and an allegation of intentional falsification is levied, what happens to the people that that are named in that? Should it be found true?
That, interestingly enough, is entirely up to management. So all that would happen is if an allegation was proven, so they'll hold a panel of scientists, they'll look at my allegation and they'll say, is this a violation of the policy? If it's a violation of the policy, then they'll give that to a manager, probably higher level manager. And I don't know what they do if it goes against the secretary. They might have to go higher than that, which would be the president. But I don't know how they're going to handle that. But there's no specific punishment that is allocated in the policy. Mm. It's just that the punishment or the mitigation for it has to be done by management.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, I'm just astounded by that. I'm curious, are you considering testifying before Congress at all, if it should come to that?
I would welcome that opportunity. I'd love to, you know, get this story out and have it actually have a formal hearing on it, but I haven't been invited yet. I'm actually potentially meeting with a congressional staffer tomorrow.
Okay, good. And then, you know, it seems to be a fact of organizations or of life, for that matter, that if it's happening to one person in one area, it's probably happening somewhere else or to someone else. Would you suspect this sort of using the cover of science to justify other desired outcomes is happening in other bureaus? And how widespread do you think that is?
I suspect that it's wider spread than we would care to think. I have already received emails from quite a few scientists who've been supportive of what I said and said they've experienced the same thing. So one, in fact, was at Reclamation about 15 years ago and told me that they were trying to, you know, improve the role of science in decision-making, and they discovered that science in Reclamation and Department of Interior really is there to support the decisions they already want to make, not to craft them. And that scientist also was forced out because of his efforts in that, against that.
Wow, amazing. So going forward then, what would your thoughts be? We have about 30 seconds or so to go here. Going forward, what would your solutions be to fix this situation, to protect scientists a little bit more in this situation?
Yeah, I forwarded a bunch of information to my former boss about how we could improve the situation with better peer review, with independent science. How can we get science that's not done by a private company or by the government, but actually done by an independent group that could be more in the public trust? I think that's the key. We need to find a way to get science that the public can trust.
Absolutely. So have you seen any ramifications for putting out your allegations at all?
Yeah, in fact, the business day after I put my allegation in, the Secretary of Interior put a press release out that he was delaying his decision on removing the dams indefinitely.
Oh,
he blamed it on a congressional authorization, but it sure is quite correlated to my accusation.
Wow, that is just totally awesome. What a victory for the little guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that alone is probably made it worth it to me, is that he's delayed that decision on removing the dams indefinitely.
All right, great. We do have to get going. Thank you so much for helping us keep an eye on government today, and we wish you all the luck with your suit, and please keep us apprised of that, or if there's anything either we or our audience can do to help you, just please let us know on that.
Thank you so much.
All right, great. And thank you for joining us today on iSpy Radio. We do hope that you're at least a little wiser than when you got here. Just a reminder, you can go onto our show page. That's just iSpyRadio.com, and you can download any of our shows off that show page. And it's been a while since we've mentioned our Facebook page. We're really bad about self-promotion sometimes. So if you're on Facebook, just search for iSpy on Salem Radio Show, and you should find us. And or you can follow the Facebook link on our own site. That's all the time we have. Thanks for joining us again today. But the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's not just a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy on Salem Radio Show.